All right, time for our chat with the coach, Bill Belichick. Fred, I know we've been talking a lot about hugging and handshakes and stuff like that, but I didn't say that you had to give the coach a big hug as he walked into the to the room. It was a big hug. I was, you know, it was a long embrace. Bill, it's good to see you.
Hey, Glenn, how you doing?
Doing all right.
Pete, Freddie.
Coach. Yeah.
Doing all right. They have made an awful lot of, and I don't, we don't understand why, and I just wanted to throw it out there, and then we'll actually get to the football game because that's really what is of concern. The protocol after a game to give a handshake or give a hug or whatever happens with Rex Ryan yesterday.
Serve appetizers.
Was there any disrespect shown? It seemed to me like you did give him the handshake. And did you realize that Mark Sanchez came up to you and I guess tried to tap you on the shoulder or shake your hand or something?
Yeah. I saw Mark and Rex after the game. And then in the tunnel after the game was over before we got on the bus, you know, I talked to both of them. So
you did have a conversation with both.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So it wasn't. So the Jet fans are.
You know, with Rex, there was a lot of cameras there and everything, and they were all jumping up and down and celebrating, as we would have been if we had won.
Rightfully so.
But no, I saw him after the game in the tunnel.
Good. So. Did that put Jets fans at ease? I hope so. All right, let me get to the game now. second quarter, after some difficulty in the first quarter, it looked like you were finally getting that offense in gear. It was crisp. You were moving the ball continuously. And obviously you had opportunities before then that you didn't cash in on. And then in the second half, the big kickoff returned by Leon Washington, then the mess up in the middle of the field with Merriweather running into his own man, and now they got another big play by Cotchery, and then they're going in with that touchdown. From that point on, that offense seemed to have difficulty. Why was it working so effectively in that second quarter? And then in the third quarter and through the rest of the game, it seemed to sputter.
You know, I don't think there's anything specific, Glenn, I could say about that. I'd say it's a combination of things. You know, we were able to move the ball a little bit in the first half, but weren't able to finish drives, couldn't get the ball in the end zone. Still had penalties, and we had those again in the second half, too. Just lack of consistency, too many long yardage situations, and just not overall good enough play. Coaching, execution, playing, whatever you want to call it. We just didn't do a good enough job consistently enough, and we didn't have the ball quite as much. You know, the Jets had a couple drives where they held the ball. I know the three-play drive was a quick one, and it got into the end zone. But they had a couple other plays or drives where they had the ball for, you know, a decent number of plays, and we didn't have it as much, and we missed some good opportunities in the first half, both in time possession and number of plays, and also field position where we had the ball on their side of the 50 to start a couple possessions. So we didn't capitalize on our opportunities the way we would like to have.
Now, when they run a blitz, it opens things and takes things away. When you have a quarterback going back and he's being blitzed, something vacates a certain area. Quarterback has to adjust, and the receivers have to adjust. It just seems to me it's very difficult when you got a guy that played quarterback last year, has been on the team a few months, to make those quick adjustments all the time. It didn't seem like they were in sync a lot.
I think the overall execution from a team standpoint offensively was at a level that we would all like to be higher. Players, coaches, protection, quarterback, receivers, tight ends, backs, running game, passing game, you name it. And the Ravens, or the Jets rather.
defensively, you're right.
The Jets ran a lot of blitzes, and they played a lot of two deep man and single, one deep man, what we call man free, and they ran a little bit of zone, but not very much. So most of it was man to man coverage combined with some elements of pressure, and again, in the end, we just need to do a little bit better job of that, blocking it, running it, getting open, throwing it, catching it, and not getting penalized. And not getting ourselves in a lot of long yardage situations. So that the longer yardage it is, the more effective they are. And we put ourselves in too many of those spots.
Were these blitzes or defensive fronts that your offense saw, were they unfamiliar to the offense?
Well, no, they were things that the Ravens or the Jets have done. Mm-hmm. But they tie them together. You know, they make it look like one thing, and then it's something else, and they make it look like that, and then they stem it over, and of course playing on the road and you know, having to try to, you know, make some adjustments at the line of scrimmage that set them off into their stemming and moving. And so they did a good job of it, you know, and at times, most of the time, really, we had it blocked. A couple of times we didn't, or a couple of times we had it blocked and somebody came free. But for the most part, we had it blocked. But there wasn't a lot of time. I mean, even though we picked it up, it wasn't like they weren't, you know, there wasn't some pressure in the pocket. So combination of time and getting open and, you know, making plays in the passing game or making plays in the running game consistently, we just didn't do a good enough job.
A couple of times it seemed like they had an extra rusher, which obviously leaves something open. You know, the best way to stop the blitz is to get the ball open, the open guy. Was Brady having trouble seeing that?
Yeah, there weren't really a lot of open guys. I mean, it was somebody that had you know, beat man-to-man coverage. Yeah. And, you know, then you have to, you know, kind of have the right route on. And, again, they did a good job on that. You know, you have an inside route on and the defender's inside, then – you know, it's a little harder for him to get open. You're better off if you had an outside route on in that particular for that particular guy. So, but again, the bottom line is we just, even when we had some good plays, we didn't string enough of them together. We didn't have too many big plays, and you know, we weren't able to, you know, to make big chunks. And when we did run the ball, or you know, at some point, it seemed like we had too many times where we would get penalized and end up in a 1st and 20 or 2nd and 20, and then, you know, that now you're trying to get a lot of yards in one or two plays, and that's, you know, that wasn't easy to do either. So I think that's really where we ran into trouble. Then we got down in the red area and we you know, twice kind of got penalized out of it the first drive. And you know, we ended up punting from the 38, and then we got down there to about the 30, 35, whatever it was, and we had those delay game penalties and ended up having to punt there. So, you know, there's a couple times we were close to being able to score points, and we ended up not scoring due to penalties. So that wasn't good either.
You used a couple of those whiteboards on the sideline to communicate. Had you done that before, Bill?
No, we'd use the wristbands, but we just felt like rather than having the quarterback have to give the wristband number to the players, that we could just write it down for them, and then they could all look over and see it, and then they wouldn't have to all come back to the huddle, and we could kind of get lined up in the formation. So we thought like that would help the communication, and I think it did. You know, I think that simplified a little bit instead of the like I said, the quarterback having to yell it out to everybody.
Was that designed for the no huddle, or did you do it?
Noise.
Because of the noise.
Well, both. Yeah, for the no huddle, and then also, you know, because of the noise, just not having everybody come. With the no huddle, it's, you know, picked up the pace a little bit, but that way everybody didn't have to come all the way back into the huddle and back out of it again, that we could, you know, kind of go to our alignments and be ready to go.
How's the whole operation of the play calling and going between Brady and, is it O'Brien, I mean, is it smooth as you expected, or are there still some?
Yeah, bumps? I don't think it's been a problem. I mean, there's always a play or two here or there where something comes up. It's a word doesn't come in, or the communication shuts off, or something happens. Mm-hmm. But no, for the most part, you know, that's been you know, all the way through preseason. This is the 6th game now, so that's been fairly smooth.
Nothing's changed. It was the same terminology and everything as last year.
Right.
Obviously, it's
yes.
Carryover.
Yeah. Yes. Considering all the changes from on defense between trades and retirements, how has been the communication on defense? Has it been better than you thought it would be at this point? I know it's only week 2, but, you know, Guyton's calling the plays now. I mean, being the dot guy, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's been fine. We had a couple, you know, we have a couple situations yesterday where we weren't quite as clean as we would like for them to be. But overall, again, through the preseason and the first 2 games, I'd say it hasn't, you know, again, it's usually a play or two. That's kind of par for the course. You'd like to have none, but seems like every game there's something that comes up that's a little bit different, and the sets at times cut out. So you're calling the play verbally, and then he can't hear you, and so you signal it. And so there's, you know, jumping through hoops on that. But overall, I think it's been good. It's probably, overall, I'd say only 2 games into the season, but, you know, we really had some problems last year. Obviously, the Miami game was a big one, but, you know, the Pittsburgh game, the San Diego game, you know, games where we really, you know, fouled things up and I'd say gave up, you know, relatively easy plays down the field for big yardage. So, you know, just from a team standpoint. It's not any one guy. I'm not saying that. It's just from a team standpoint. I'd overall say the communication this year has been, you know, it hasn't been a major problem.
Bill, it looks like physically, defense, the line held up pretty well. Doing a two-gap, they made the, stout with the running back. It looked like Wright had some good penetration. And Wolfwerk, do you see that front? It didn't get moved much. It looked like they played pretty physical up front and held their own.
Yeah, I thought overall we did a decent job up front. We got hit on a couple of cutback runs there with Washington and Jones. But overall, you know, that's a pretty experienced offensive line, you know, with Ferguson and Faneca. Mangold's one of the best centers in the league. And, you know, Moore, Woody, and those backs are good backs. You know, Jones and Washington are good backs. So could have been better. There's room for improvement. But overall, I thought it was pretty competitive. And there were a number of times where we, you know, didn't have anybody extra down in there. We just had to handle it with the six or the seven guys in the box. And, you know, at times we played three safeties and
Cowan?
McGowan, sorry, thank you. And he's Brandon. I was thinking Brandon.
He's reading your mind.
We have two Brandons.
Yeah.
And he's Brandon McGowan down there some. And James Sanders also when Merriweather was out. So, we used three safeties and gave us a little more speed and athleticism on the field, Chase Washington and Jones and some of those guys around.
I should let the audience know that the music you hear in the background is not us. Fred cannot sing that well. I can
Oh, yes, I can.
No, you cannot. U2 is actually practicing in the background. Is this a licensing issue? I'm not sure. But there's nothing we can do about it.
A lot of tattoos out there, Bill.
And you know what? Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm not paying the license anyway because we can't get to go to the bathrooms. They occupy the bathrooms. How many people go to the bathroom in this group?
It's Tiasi went, but they pulled the hissy fit.
It's unbelievable. Hey, Bill, a lot has been made of the first 2 weeks of Brady throwing the ball, 100 times now? Obviously, the first game you're behind in that game, so you got to throw the football late in the game. Did you look yesterday to run a little bit, and you had some issues running? Was that it, or is this just what the game is dictating right now? That's why he's throwing the ball 100 times. There's no change in philosophy here.
Well, I think from game to game, things will go however we feel like will be best for us offensively. Our goal is to score points and move the ball and score points, and however we can do that, that's what I'm for. That's what we want to do. Yesterday. Again, we ended up in some long yardage situations. We had, the 2 minute drive at the end of the half. That was we were pretty balanced up until that last drive before the half, and then that was like 10 passes and 2 runs or something like that. I forget exactly what it was, and that kind of tilted a little bit there in the first half. And in the second half, we ended up in some long yardage, and then of course we were throwing the ball in the fourth quarter. So, had the score been different, had the situation been different, you know, that would have helped. But again, we had 2 good runs called back. I think one gained 10 yards, one gained 12 yards on a couple holding calls. And so instead of being able to, you know, run runs on top of those plays, we're in, you know, second and 20 and first and 20. And
third and 19.
Third and 19. And so that's, you know, those aren't the optimum running downs.
Delay a game, too. Those have got to be killers.
Well, yeah, we delay a game ourselves right out of field goal range. Yeah. It's definitely not what we want to do.
Is that just because I know it's extremely noisy there?
Oh, no, we just
was a play getting
we just
later?
Didn't get it off in time. No, it's a combination of things. It just we were a little bit late, and then they stemmed, and then we tried to
adjust
it, and we just ran out of time. So it's not it's obviously not where we want to be.
Did they surprise you in the choice of captains for that game?
I didn't even see who the captains were.
All the expatriates.
Oh.
Steve was even called up.
I was the next Jet, too.
I didn't know who was. There were so many people out there at the coin toss. I couldn't even. There was
your old
20 people out there.
O'Connell was out there.
Woody O'Connell. Larry.
I couldn't see them all. So.
What was the biggest defense difference with your defense in the first half as opposed to the second half? I know there was a time of possession difference in the first half that was in your favor, but basically what happened in the second half that let Sanchez be more effective?
He came back to the weak side, hit Cotchery on 3, you know, weak side passes mm-hmm. back there, the curl, and then those 2 posts. I'd say that was, you know, the big thing. They converted, you know, they didn't have any third down conversions in the first half, so we were able to, you know, get off the field there. In the second half, they converted 3 of them, 2 were third and longs, and another was a 3rd and 3 or 4, whatever it was. So, you know, that kept a couple of drives going. So overall, we, you know, those third down conversions kept them, and then also the, you know, the long plays on that first drive with the, you know, the long pass, and then the, and well, the kickoff return, then the catch and run on the post by Cotchery, and then Keller in the end zone.
What happened on the was it Merriweather ran into the corner, right? Was that what the play?
Yeah, we knocked each other off there, and that tacked on about another 25 yards to the play.
Yeah.
That was an impressive tackle by Guyton, though, running him down.
Mm.
Boy, he can run.
Yeah, I thought it was an impressive play.
Hey, going back to what expanding on what Freddie was saying earlier, in dealing with your offense right now, because we've seen this type of defense before. We've seen it. Baltimore is a great example of it. And the offense looked like the timing had been there in the past, and the timing looked way off yesterday. How much of that is due to right now you're not on the same page, that maybe some receivers are not making the right reads right now, that the routes are not clean and crisp as they should be as time goes on? How much of that is work that you guys have to do right now to get this thing flowing?
Well, we're gonna keep working just like we always do, and it's the second week of the season. We got a long way to go, and I would hope that in any year we'd execute better in the 8th, 9th, 10th week of the year than in the 1st or 2nd. But you always want it as high a point as you can get it at, and certainly a lot of room for improvement on our end. And as I said yesterday, we need to do a better job of coaching. We need to do a better job of playing, and we just need to go out there and overall as a team execute better, top to bottom, offense, defense, special teams, running game, passing game, coverage, returns, you name it. There were things in that game in every area there that they need to be better. That's the only way I can put it. They just need to be better, and it starts with me and a coaching staff, and goes into every player and every guy that steps across the white line out there on Sunday afternoon. We all got to do a better job.
Is so Joey Galloway up to speed yet with the offense?
Oh, sure. Yeah, unless we put in something new for that particular week on a game plan, but that's then it's kind of new for everybody. But sure, yeah, we're running the same things we ran in the spring.
Bill, question. Everyone always makes a big thing, I'm talking about Glenn, about picking up a player from the team. They picked up O'Connell, and how much can he give you? How many is players floating all over the place from every team? How much of a difference does a guy coming in giving away
secrets? We actually talked
about
this. Remember 2 weeks ago we talked about this.
Yeah, he was one of the captains. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you can look up film, and I'm sure that the Jets could look at film with or without Kevin O'Connell and look at our protections and look at our routes. And he might be able to provide a little insight on a particular play, the way a guy is going to read it or a certain protection. But I think they would probably get most of that anyway. But, you know, we do enough different things where there's no way they could know what play was coming or what route was coming or what protection was coming. There's just too many of them, and they run too many different things themselves. So it's pretty hard to match them up. So I really don't think that was a big factor in the game as far as the actual playing of the game and what was or what wasn't done. Probably where Kevin could help him was during the week for the scout team of running the offense because he knew how to run it, and he ran it for over a year. So I'm sure he did a good job of that.
I mentioned the Leon Washington kickoff return to open up the second half. Your overall assessment of your kickoff coverage, because they seem to get good position most of the day on those kicks.
Yeah, not as good as we would like it to be. There was no phase of special teams other than, you know, Steve was 3 for 3 on the field goals, but our kickoff and punt coverage wasn't to the standard we'd like it to be, and neither was our return game. We had 3 yards on punt returns, and we had one good kickoff return called back, and the other ones were they weren't. They just weren't very effective. We didn't do a good job on them. So we need to be better than that. We need to be better than that in the kicking game all the way around, coverage and returns.
Were you surprised early Sunday when Welker wasn't able to go? Was that something you kind of in the back of your mind thought it probably might happen?
Well, he was getting better all week, and he practiced and did some things on the field. But, you know, it's never kind of the way those things go, Pete. You know, you do things in practice, but you never really – open it up because you want to give it a couple more days before you really test it. And, you know, it's getting better, and you hope that by Sunday it'll be okay. And then when the player goes out and takes a look at it on Sunday and it isn't, then, you know, then he knows. And if he goes out there and it feels good, then he knows. But you really don't know until, you know, until he kind of opens
did he,
it
did
up.
Did he come to you after he was doing whatever? And just said, I just because he seems like the kind of guy you'd have to hit him over the head with a hammer to get him out of a game. So he must have really been hurting not to be able to go in that game.
Well, yeah. I mean, Wes did everything he could to be there. Same thing he did last week against Buffalo. And as I said, you get to after Friday's practice, that's really the last time we go out and practice, you know, at that tempo. Saturday's just a walkthrough. So after practice on Friday, he had two more days of treatment. And actually, I rode over to the stadium with Wes Sunday morning, and he got there and, you know, did his thing and just didn't feel like he would be able to, you know, play to the level that he needed to play at. So it was a game time decision, and which a lot of them are. I mean, that's very common, and you know what, as a coach, you never really know for sure on a lot of those which way it's going to go. And when you find out, then you're ready to go both ways. And then once you find out, then you have that next hour before the game to kind of finalize things. But that's really when we know, when just about when you guys know.
Let me ask you one more question about this game, and then we'll move on to Atlanta next week. Could you explain to us exactly what you're dealing with this type of defense that Rex Ryan throws, and that they overload to one side, and sometimes they'll shoot the gap, and there'll be a couple of people that come through? Is it a matter of each guy has got to have a head, and how do you determine how that happens? You were talking about the free guy. How do you determine in an instant who's going to pick up on who in that situation?
Well, it's not to get overly complex, but most of Baltimore, most of the Jets blitzes are man blitzes, and so if you use your back in protection or a tight end in protection, if you use one of your eligible receivers in protection, then you can usually pick up the number of blitzers that they have. The question is, the player who's covering that guy, if he comes to, then that brings an extra guy into it. If you release that player into the pattern, then he won't blitz. He'll go and cover him. So it just comes down to a little bit of a numbers game as to how many guys you have to block. And sometimes the guy who's covering that player isn't necessarily standing right over him. He might be coming from somewhere else. But then he becomes another blitzer, so you add him into the group. So if let's say they bring five and they cover five receivers with five guys and then have a middle of the field safety, which they do a fair amount of, sometimes that safety will work over the top of Moss and sometimes he doesn't, and you block a player, then that five rushers now becomes six. And if you block two players, then those five rushers now become seven. And a lot of times they only had one defensive lineman in the game, so they really have 10 potential guys who could blitz or cover. So as opposed to a 4-3 defense or something like that, where most of the time the linemen are rushing and the linebackers and DBs are covering, and it's more conventional. One of the things they do a good job of, they put a lot of linebackers in the game, like maybe one lineman, four linebackers, and six defensive backs. And sometimes it's hard to tell which guys are the linemen and which guys are the linebackers. And so that's part of the identification and the communication and the moving around that they do and all that. So those are the ways that they challenge you. It's not, you know, anything we haven't seen before. It's not anything that's, you know, revolutionized the game. But they do a good job with it. They disguise things well. They have different looks off it, and they make you work at it.
But one screw up can really mess.
Yeah, and obviously we made some errors, or sometimes we're a little bit late getting to the player that we're supposed to block, and he kind of catches a little bit of an edge and gets some pressure, and you know sometimes we beat them on it, and you know get guys out and you know get them free and that kind of thing. So it was. You know, but that's the challenge of it. That's really what it came down to. It was a totally different blitz package than, let's say, the Steelers, who are predominantly a zone blitz team. The Ravens are a man blitz team. And as I said, if you block a guy, then they bring another blitzer. So they have the potential to bring a lot of guys.
So what makes Ryan's package unique? I mean, it's nothing that hasn't been used before.
It's just what they do. Yeah, I mean, they do what they do. And what they do is – they do a lot of man blitzes, and then at the same time they also will rush four and cover with seven people. So, you know, you can't always count on that. I think what probably is a little bit unorthodox from them is that they'll bring, you know, four, sometimes five people off of one side, and they also like to bring, you know, three guys up the middle. And so that, if they bring them up the middle, then your tackles or your guards, whoever it is, has to squeeze inside to get them and not take the guys who are outside, who are normally, you know, defensive ends. And yeah. So they just have to recognize that and make that adjustment. So, you know, those are the challenges.
Patriots Monday, we're talking with Bill Belichick. 90-second break. We'll come back and we'll break down Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons after this. Back here at the Big Show, it's Patriots Monday. We're live down here at Gillette Stadium. Steve, you just had to go and watch you two for a little bit.
No, I didn't. I walked into the production room and had my way with the bathroom.
You went over
Fred,
there.
Fred, you're afraid. You're afraid.
I don't want some tattooed hippie coming up and bothering me.
You're afraid
me,
of
and
those
I get arrested,
hippies.
All right?
You're afraid of the
hippies.
Let's
get to this Atlanta game, Coach. And Matt Ryan had Roddy White before. And now he's got Tony Gonzalez, who he's gone an awful lot to here in the first 2 weeks. What does Gonzalez do to this offense?
Well, he's really added a big dimension.
Just push that red button in front of
him. Thank you, Glenn. Yeah, he's added a great dimension for him offensively. They use him on the backside of a lot of formations and kind of isolate him back there. He had a big game against Miami the first opening weekend, you know, where he's matched up against Bell on the backside. And he's tough. You know, we saw him in opening day here last year, and we had a hard time with him. He's a very tough guy to match up against. And, you know, he's big, he's rangy, and he's a pretty effective run blocker just because he's big enough and athletic enough to tie people up and they have an outstanding running game. And so, you know, Ryan's got, you know, he's got Gonzalez and he's got Roddy White and Jenkins, and he's got those backs. You know, Norwood's an excellent receiver, and they can run the ball. So they're pretty good. They have a good offensive line, and they're fast on defense and special teams, very fast.
He's pretty poised, though. I mean, Ryan has a nice arm.
He does.
You know, BC, of course, you're well-educated. You have to learn the game.
Handsome,
cute, clean, use a lot of deodorant. But they also – He in college, he didn't have the fastest guys in the world. He had to be more accurate, but he seems to have a very accurate, strong arm.
He does. He has a strong arm. He's
don't say
you
tall.
Know mobile enough in the pocket. You know, I mean, he's not a big time runner back there, but he can move around enough to buy time and get open. And he makes good judgment. He does a good job. He's smart. He reads coverage as well. He doesn't look like a rookie. I mean, I know it's his second year, but he looks like a guy who's comfortable throwing the ball in the NFL.
He's a you talk about his confidence. That just seems to be growing. You watched him last year. Came out pretty well, but it just seemed like his confidence just grew from the get-go. And now it seems like the guys around him are a lot more confident too.
Well, they look confident. I mean, I don't know. It looks like he's confident. Yep. It really does. And it looks like the players around him are confident. When he changes a play, everybody jumps into action. They know what to do. And he does the right thing. You know, he makes a lot of good decisions. And it's clear that he's well prepared. He's poised. He sees the field, and he knows what he's doing. I mean, like any quarterback, you know, there's always going to be a couple plays that I'm sure that they wish they had back. But for the most part, he does a very solid job of reading, recognizing, throws accurately, can get the ball down the field. They hit some big plays in the passing game.
More traditional offense. We haven't seen a ton of them, but
yes,
seems pretty traditional.
Yeah, they play a lot with a fullback, you know, two receivers, two backs, and a tight end. More conventional. They'll mix it up, but they do that, and then their three receiver set when they bring Norwood in there on third down. You know, then they have five good receivers in the game, including Gonzalez. So they're pretty potent.
We spent a lot of time last week talking about what the Jets defense was going to attempt with the Ravens defense, what they were going to attempt to do against you guys. These guys are quick. What do you expect them to do? What?
You know, they of course come from the Jacksonville background, where Coach Smith was before under Del Rio, and you know, they're fast. I mean, Abraham's certainly a guy that can change the game, as we well know from his days with the Jets. Mm-hmm. But they're fast. They run well. They play zone coverage, but they also will pressure you. And they don't give up a lot of big plays because they pursue well. They're fast and they track them down. But they're a good solid team. They've got some young players. They drafted, you know, most of the top part of their draft last year was on defensive players, and I know they're trying to get younger over there. And they've got some quality, you know, quality players there. Probably a little more experienced overall on the offensive side of the ball.
On defense, how much blitzing they do?
Well, they mix it up on you a little bit. I mean, they're not anywhere at the percentages of the Jets, yeah. But you know they'll bring it.
They run a lot. Are they a two gap team on defense for the base?
Well, not really. No, they're probably more of a one gap team. I mean, they do two gap, but they're more of a one gap team.
Run stunts? Are they stunting?
Yeah, they're fast and they'll stunt. I mean, they'll sit in there, but they'll stunt around, and they're fast enough. You know, if you don't get them, you're not going to catch them. You know, you got to get on them. If you try to run them down, they usually get free, especially as linebackers.
How much back to the Jets game for a second? Because when you're running, it's that loud.
You can't let it go.
You know, no, because I'm talking about a team that likes to penetrate. When you're playing at home as opposed to away, and you got to go on that silent count. I saw one of the times. Jenkins was in there, and Stephen Neal didn't get out of his stance real quick and had to grab him around the waist. I mean, that really hurts. So when you're coming home and you have the luxury of being able to get the count out, they can hear it, as opposed to a loud crowd where you can't do that. It makes a big difference, especially on a team that likes to penetrate and get upfield.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more there. Yeah, it's hard to – that's an advantage. Those teams that are good one-gap teams playing at home, like the Vikings used to be, you know, with John Randall and guys like that, or Kansas City with Derek Thomas and those guys. Now teams like Indianapolis and you know, those teams that really get off on the ball and can hit it on the road – if you're a little bit, you know, just a split second late out of your stance and you're not right in front of them, they're on the edge and they're by you and it's trouble. So, absolutely, that's a big advantage for, you know, for those teams and especially on the road, on turf.
Especially when a 400-pound guy starts getting momentum, you don't get out of stance. You know about that, Glenn, right?
I do know about that, Fred. Your favorite portion of the program is back time right now for the Eastern Bank Coaches Question of the Week. Eastern Bank, the official bank of teamwork. Our team of banking, investment, and insurance professionals are ready to tackle all of your needs. And today's question is from Mike in Brookline, Massachusetts.
Hey, Coach. With this being the final regular season game you'll play at Giant Stadium, I wanted to know if you had a particular game or memory that stands out from that stadium. Thanks.
It wasn't yesterday, was it?
Yeah. I'll try to forget that one. Yeah. Mike, that's a great question. There were a lot of great ones there. When I was the defensive coordinator of the Giants, and also, you know, some fond memories of going back down there with the Patriots and beating the Jets in, eight straight or whatever it was, 0-1, yeah, eight straight. So, but I would say probably the 86 season when we beat the 49ers 49-3, and then the following week beat the Redskins 17-0 to go to the NFC Championship to go to the Super Bowl in 86. So that was big, beating the Bears in 90. The first win in the playoffs that season, you know, before we went out and beat San Francisco, and then finally Buffalo in the Super Bowl. That was pretty big too. But I'd say the playoff wins. But we had a great record there at home, and there's a lot of games that stand out. But I'd say those would be at the top of the list. The other one, which wasn't a good game for us, was the 49er game in 1984. But that was the night that my daughter was born. So
good memories.
Kind of remember that. Wow. That game,
a loss and a win that night.
Yeah, it was a loss and a win.
Which one was the one?
Those are all great. Where does my first start for you with the Giants rank in that pantheon of great games?
That'd be in the top 10, Steve.
Thank you very
much. I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed. What about that great Saturday afternoon game when you're down 22-0 to the Giants and the Patriots made that great comeback?
That was a memorable one.
That was a great one.
That was a memorable one. The first one that I went back for when I was at Cleveland. And came back and played the Giants. We played them in like the third or fourth regular season game. And Mark Ingram caught a corner pattern right in front of our bench and ran me over and knocked me down underneath the Gatorade cups.
Remember that?
Did you send Jim Bird after Montana that year? Remember, was it 86 that he knocked him out of the game?
No, they didn't.
No, which
year?
I know they didn't block him. How could Burt beat anybody?
It was 86.
It was 86. Mm-hmm. He told me about it over and over.
He was the quickest nose tackle I've ever seen.
Burt's a better pass rusher than people gave him credit for.
Yep. He Burt got had great quickness. He anticipated runs. It looked like he was reading the play before, because he had great quickness side to side. Plus, he was a punk and trying to fight everybody.
Now this sound familiar?
We were best of friends.
Yeah. Now, this new Giants stadium, they said, just towers over the other one, huh? Right next door, towers over it?
It does tower over it. It's significantly bigger and kind of wider. Just, you know, I didn't go inside of it, just to the eye. It's a big structure.
Sounds like the coach of the Jets.
Did you see the
Stop it.
Did you see the coronation of the
Dallas?
Yeah, Jerry
Cowboys
Jones.
I didn't see the game last night.
Oh, my God. That place was unbelievable.
105,000.
Unbelievable. But apparently the new gimmick now is that the players come onto the field right through like a bar. They come through a club.
A club, yeah.
And they have a club there.
Yes.
With the cheerleaders.
Yeah, so you're
with
on.
The cheerleaders.
So at the 50-yard line, they come
what
on
right
on there.
What has happened to football coach?
Marketing.
It's marketing, and they go right by. Now, apparently they had to put plexiglass for the visitors' entrance onto the field because apparently.
Oh, good.
I was going to say, they probably need it for the Cowboys, too. They'd stop and have a cold one on the way out.
Somebody complained during the preseason, but it was wild to see that.
And Jerry Jones, who would think he'd do something like that, you know?
He was in his glory last night. There's no question about it.
Yeah,
till the last second of the game.
He almost smiled, stretched his skin.
No, I tell you what, it always ruins it, doesn't it? I mean, you're opening up your stadium, and everything's great and terrific.
Well, it was poetic justice because when Giants Stadium opened up, Dallas went there. And
you saw how they tried to ice the long snapper there on the field goal. You know, that was the timeout was not for anybody other than the snapper. Yeah. They don't care about
once
the
again, Zach overcame adversity.
You were driving down there with your Mosa. I'll kill them. We'll do those my shot.
Let me ask Bill that question because we were talking about that off the air earlier. And it happened last night as they tried to freeze the kicker, but he had already kicked the field goal, went through the uprights. Now he's got to do it all over again. Do you believe there should be a time limit on when you can call that timeout? Or do you believe that you've got a guy right next to you? You can wait right to the last second till his foot is, he's ready to move. And then you can call that timeout.
We can't call it before. You can't call it after the snap.
No, you have to call it before the snap. Right. Obviously.
So yeah, I think you got to do that. Be consistent. If I were going to call it, and we probably would, it would be before they had a chance to kick the ball.
Right.
I would want to get it called early enough so they couldn't kick it.
Yep. You think that does any good? Can you freeze a guy? There's certain guys that you know you can get into their head, and others
call names.
I don't know. I mean, the only one I wouldn't have frozen was, you know, was Vinatieri in the Oakland game because there was so much snow on the ground. It helped us clear it out.
Right.
So, on the overtime
right,
kick,
right,
yeah,
right,
on
yeah.
The
overtime,
but so. You can't limit when you can call a timeout. I mean,
I don't see how you can.
It's another crazy Glenn thought.
No. They were talking a lot about it.
But if you're in a huddle and all of a sudden there's 1 second left and you go timeout and you save an offensive penalty, you can't limit on 1 second.
Right. You can't suddenly say a kicker is treated differently than another.
I just can't remember it working in recent history, that last second timeout before the field.
But I notice coaches are doing it later and later now. They're really trying to wait. A lot of guys would call that timeout and say, okay, let them think about it for a little bit. Now they want them to go through the whole ritual, let them kick it off, and then we'll call it. That's the Eastern Bank Coach's Question of the Week. Eastern Bank, the official bank of teamwork. Our team of banking, investment, and insurance professionals, they're all ready to tackle all of your needs. All right, Bill, good luck on Sunday. We'll
good
see
luck,
you back
coach.
Here on Monday.
Good luck.
All right, thanks.
All right, have
thanks,
a good
Lance.
Week.
Thanks, Coach.
Take a quick break.
Thank you.
We're back here on the Big Show.